Have you ever watched your brilliant idea get credited to the guy who repeated it 5 minutes later? Ever been interrupted so many times in a meeting that you just stopped trying to finish your sentences? Ever wondered if you're being paranoid about workplace sexism or if it's actually happening? In 2009, a group of women in New York started meeting in secret to answer exactly these questions. They called themselves the Feminist Fight Club, not to wage war on men, but to combat the subtle, maddening sexism that pervades even the most progressive workplaces. What began as wine-fueled venting sessions evolved into something powerful, a sisterhood armed with strategies, data, and the shared recognition that they weren't crazy, the system was. This wasn't your mother's feminism of burning bras and breaking glass ceilings. This was about surviving the thousand tiny cuts that bleed women's confidence and stall their careers, one sweetie and stolen idea at a time. Today's workplace sexism operates through subtle signals, being called sweetheart in meetings, mistaken for the assistant despite your VP title, watching men promoted for potential while you need more credentials. The same confidence that earns men praise gets women labeled aggressive. The data confirms this reality. Women earn 93% of male peers' salaries in their first post-college year, even controlling for job choice, GPA, and hours worked. They negotiate less often and face harsher judgment when they do. The invisible nature of these barriers triggers constant self-doubt. Did he really take credit for my work, or am I oversensitive? This questioning consumes mental energy better spent on actual work. Recognizing these patterns as systematic barriers, not personal failings, is essential to the modern feminist fight. Every workplace harbors characters who undermine women's contributions. The man interrupter speaks over women mid-sentence, stealing their ideas and credit. Research confirms men interrupt more frequently, and women get interrupted by everyone, including other women. The bro-propriator claims women's ideas as his own. A woman proposes a solution, silence. 10 minutes later, a man suggests the same thing. Suddenly, it's brilliant. Elizabeth Maggi invented Monopoly, but Charles Darrow profited. Rosalind Franklin's research revealed DNA's structure, but Watson and Crick won the Nobel Prize. The stenographer treats professional women like secretaries. Can you take notes? Mind-grabbing coffee? Even Melody Hobson, DreamWorks board chair, gets mistaken for kitchen staff. The mansplainer delivers patronizing explanations to women who often know more. The menster hater blames women's assertiveness on hormones rather than legitimate concerns. These behaviors aren't always malicious. Sometimes they stem from cultural conditioning. But impact matters more than intent. Whether conscious or unconscious, these patterns create hurdles men don't face, forcing women to work harder for equal recognition. External obstacles are only half the battle. Women also face internal barriers, self-sabotaging behaviors developed as adaptive responses to workplace expectations. The office mom volunteers for thankless tasks like organizing celebrations and restocking supplies. Studies show women, especially women of color, take on significantly more office housework without professional credit, while men doing the same tasks are more likely to be recommended for promotions. The credit defaulter attributes success to luck or help from others rather than skill. When praised, she deflects, "Oh, it was nothing." Men point to innate qualities and personal competence. This pattern actively undermines perceived competence and makes others question whether credit was deserved. The doormat fears saying no and becomes overworked by prioritizing everyone else's needs. Research shows women face penalties for declining requests that men don't experience, worse evaluations, fewer promotions, labels of being difficult. Perhaps most damaging is the imposter, suffering from imposter syndrome, that persistent feeling that despite accomplishments, you're a fraud about to be exposed. This affects women, racial minorities, and LGBTQ individuals disproportionately. Even Sheryl Sandberg, Tina Fey, and Michelle Obama admit to experiencing it. These internal barriers aren't character flaws. They're rational responses to workplace cultures that penalize women for behaviors that earn men promotions. Women in leadership face contradictory expectations. Be successful, but not too successful, or you're ruthless. Show warmth, and you're too nice to lead. Consider ambition. Search Bernie Sanders and ambition, and you'll find praise for his ambitious plans. Search Hillary Clinton and ambition, and you'll find unbridled, ruthless, even pathological. Same quality, opposite judgment. The what a nag trap shows how gender colors perception. When a man follows up, he must really need it. When a woman does, she's nagging. Women of color face the angry black woman stereotype that punishes assertiveness. The glassed cliff places women and people of color in leadership during crises, then blames them when they struggle. Carly Foriona took over HP before the tech bubble burst. Anne Mulcahy became Xerox's first female CEO as the company faced SEC investigation. These traps consume mental energy, forcing women to constantly monitor behavior in ways men don't. The solution isn't contorting yourself to meet impossible standards. It's recognizing these double binds and working to change the underlying biases. The most powerful weapon against workplace sexism isn't individual grit, it's solidarity. Throughout history, women achieved the most standing together. Suffragists winning voting rights, the Jane Collective providing underground abortions, militant housewives staging Depression-era boycotts. In the workplace, solidarity takes practical forms. It's the womanterruption, interrupting a man who's interrupting a female colleague. It's publicly supporting another woman's idea before a man can claim it. It's creating rotation systems for office housework. It's finding a boast bitch, a female colleague who promotes your accomplishments while you promote hers, making you both look better without appearing self-promoting. Male allies are equally crucial. Equality benefits everyone through more profitable companies, shared financial burdens, and healthier families. Men can help by giving women proper credit, interrupting man-interrupters, sharing administrative tasks, avoiding gendered language, and taking paternity leave. The original feminist Fight Club embodied this solidarity. When one member was depressed after a breakup, working from bed with a stress rash, the others showed up with coffee. As one member explained, that was the air in our lungs. It was knowing we were not alone. The workplace wasn't designed for women, but we can navigate it strategically. When interrupted, use, "I wasn't done with my point," or keep talking, a tactic called verbal chicken. When asked to take notes, respond with, "I'd be happy to this time, but let's rotate this responsibility." When negotiating salary, cite market research rather than personal worth. Document patterns by tracking dates, situations, and details. This builds evidence for reviews and formal complaints. Before accepting extra work, ask, "Who's requesting? What's the time commitment and benefit? Would a man be asked?" Channel confidence, not arrogance, but the unapologetic self-belief mediocre men display effortlessly. Apply when you meet 60% of requirements. View failure as learning. Set boundaries without apologizing. Most importantly, find your people. Start your own feminist fight club, a space to share struggles, strategize responses, and remember you're not alone. The system is rigged, but collective action changes it. In a world that pays women less and judges them harsher, solidarity isn't just nice, it's survival.